Blog Talk Radio. Log Talk Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
It's for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start the show, this one mic.
We will. There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughed up a lung. They're looking around the Jumbotron shows and fans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Ruff.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
One mic.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, then people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yesterday, you know, as we start the show, this one mic.
If you like to lose your money, be a fool and bet on Sunday. Say, come back to me, listen. And listen starts to retreat. If listen goes back to his father, he'll end up in the ringside seat. Clay swings with his left. Clay swings with his right. Look at young Cactus carry the fight. Listen keeps backing, but there's not enough room. It's a matter of time. Everybody loves the moon. I don't have a mark on my face.
Yeah.
And I upset Sonny Liston. And I just turned 22 years old. I must be the greatest.
Good.
I
hold it.
The greatest. Born Cassius Marcellus Clay, January 17, 1942, in Louisville, Kentucky. He changed his name to Muhammad Ali soon after he became the youngest heavyweight champion of the world after defending the mighty Sonny Liston. And he left us on July 4th at 74 years old with an imprint that the world is still trying to understand. As always, we thank you for spending the next 90 minutes with us. This is the One Mic, Real Sports Guys, brought to you by Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for being with us tonight. I'm here with my man Hank. And, you know, we got to start out by remembering, you know, someone that impacted our life. But before we get on and bless the mic, I'm going to have my guy Hank come on in. How you doing, Hank? I got to help Hank a little bit because I...
Hey, what's happening? You know...
It's always
good being on the airwaves with your D Wills. Where we were talking off air, folks, before we got on, it seems like now it's getting kind of bittersweet. You know, it's awesome to be able to get on here and rap a little bit about what's going on in the sports world, but it almost seems like it's synonymous with us losing another icon. You know, the last time I was on the air with you, we were talking about Prince, and we dedicated that whole show to, you know, a musical icon, a musical legend, and now you're talking about a sports icon, sports legend that just transcended sports in real life. You know, it's surreal, actually. You know, what's been going on in 2016 with some of our heroes, you know, just seem to be, you know, falling. But this one hurts as much as the rest, but you know, you when you say Muhammad Ali, you're not just talking about boxing. You're talking about a humanitarian for all ages.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I was talking to Phil T, you know, one of the big three on our big show on our other podcast, and Phil and I were talking, and Phil and I are separated by about 10 years, and so he's younger than me, and so the way he saw Ali, he just saw like the real tail end of his career, and I kind of saw the last half, and I would see you probably saw, you know, all of his career in most ways, or most of it in a different way. So you could see, you got your chance to see the transition. And, you know, what I told him is that, you know, until Obama became president, you know, for me growing up, you know, Ali was that voice. You know, we didn't have a president, but we had somebody who was like that moral conscience, who was that person who pushed against things, kind of had this kind of global impact in a way that we would hope that a president would, you know, if you were a young black man growing up in, you know, the 70s and the 80s, really thinking about what's going on. And so, you know, losing someone like that, as you said, you know, I think about the impact that, you know, Prince had on me musically. And so, you know, we're losing these folks who helped to kind of shape, you know, our thinking, you know, and help us to kind of see life. And what was similar about both of them is that, they gave you permission to go against the grain and be outside the box and be independent. So, you know, when I started seeing the news that he was hospitalized, you know, you kind of get this feeling and things kind of go, it's just incredible. You know, hey, when you think about Ali, like, what are some of the memories that you had when you think about Ali and how he shaped you and the things that impacted you?
Well, see, let me tell you that in the sports world, Ali, you know, with me growing up, Ali became, you know, everybody's hero. You know, I can tell you that Ali was my dad's hero as far as a fighter. And you know, you when you're close to your dad, or you're close to your parents, all of a sudden he becomes your hero. When I think about Muhammad Ali, I always think about the first fight against Joe Frazier. I was way too young to even know nor care about boxing when he beat Sonny Liston. Okay, when I first heard about or understood about Muhammad Ali was when he was fighting Joe Frazier the first time. I just remember the buzz of him coming back after the whole having his title stripped from him. Now, all of these things happened while I was way too young to even understand who he was, while he was beginning his time as an activist. But as a young man, you know, I'm listening to my father talk about, this is right during the time of the Vietnam War, you know, when Ali said the famous line that he didn't have anything against the Viet Cong, so why should he go over there and fight? And I'm paraphrasing that. But that was while I was just, you know, way too young to understand the impact that he was already making on this world. When I first understood what was going on was the hype that was going around with the first fight between him and Joe Frazier. This was his coming out fight. He's ready to get back into it. There was a lot of buzz about him coming out as Muhammad Ali, you know, against Joe Frazier, and he lost that fight. And I remember just the devastation, how my father felt and everything, that Joe Frazier had broke his jaw. I remember like it was yesterday that he was actually on TV, I want to say like days after the fight against Frazier. He was talking to Howard Cosell. That back then all them fights was on TV. Not they was on closed circuit back then. I'm really dating myself now. But I just remember that from that fight and moving on, that Muhammad Ali and his name and just his charisma and just who he was, how he made himself be a figure that you just had to pay attention to. And when he lost fights, it almost hurt you because he couldn't be, even though he was just a human being, people idolized him. They idolized him for what he was, who he was, because he did talk loudly, but he backed it up. And for anyone my age and a little older, he was the man. I mean, he was anywhere, any sport, anything that went on. Muhammad Ali was it. At any time. time he fought, people stopped, okay, of all colors, of all genders, they stopped to watch what Muhammad Ali did. You know, a lot of people, a lot of fighters right now, this was in boxing's heyday, you know, when all the heavyweights ruled the roost. And now, here it is in 2016, of all the great fighters that were out in the 70s and the 80s, you know, you had the Muhammad Ali's, you had the Joe Frazier's, you had the Ken Norton's, you had the George Foreman's, and you had these fighters going after each other. It was something to see, and they hated each other, okay? And they fought, okay? None of the dancing around that Mayweather did. They fought. Okay, now that probably hurt a lot of these guys, especially Ali, who spent 30-plus years with Parkinson's. But that being said, you got your money's worth when you watch those guys fight. They hated each other. And, you know, even though you went to the lesser weights now, the welterweights, you had the, at the time, you had the spinoffs when you had the Sugar Ray Leonards, when you had the Tommy Hearns. They were coming from behind. They was coming up after watching the Ali's and the Frazier's. So you saw great fighters, which also begat great fighters in lesser weight classes. And that was the heyday of boxing. Nothing like we have today. But I think but you have to attribute all of that to Muhammad Ali and what he did. He transcended sports from one of the most violent sports out there when you talk about fighting and boxing. But he was a humanitarian. People loved him. And, you know, he's going to be sorely missed. I don't think that his passing you know, and I have to be sensitive how I say this. A lot of people know he was sick for a long time. But people can reminisce on Muhammad Ali. People watch Muhammad Ali's health deteriorate over the last several years, and a lot of people are thankful that he's no longer in pain, that he is at peace, and it is a monumental loss. But, you know, as time goes, he will always be remembered for the man that he was versus what nature and health, you know, reduced him to. But when you hear the tributes, those are heartfelt tributes of a great man, of a great humanitarian over decades that transcends generations.
You're listening to The Real Sports Guys on One Mic. We're here with Devon Wilson and my guy Hank Davis. You know, we are spending some time talking about the greatest. And, you know, when you just say the greatest, you know, people already know that you're talking about Muhammad Ali worldwide. And, Hank, you talked about, you know, his ability and willingness to fight anyone. I was last night I was watching a documentary that they were doing. They were doing several things related to Ali, but the one on Spinks, Leon Spinks, and you forget how good the Spinks brothers were to have two brothers that good. But Leon, just hearing him talk about that experience and that preparation, how much he wanted to win. As he was describing, I could remember almost crying when Ali lost to Leon, and you know he came back and won the second fight, but you know, the emotion that people had and how much they put in the Ali as we, you know, rooted him on. And, you know, and you know, the Frazier fight, the first one in Madison Square Garden, you know, where it was divided, you know, and the irony between, you know, how Joe Frazier was portrayed and how, you know, Ali portrayed him. And given that, you know, Frazier had this, you know, really rough and tumble upbringing, Ali had more of a middle class kind of upbringing, just the complexity of him. But then in the end, you know, to be able to preach this kind of thing around love and, you know, and the story of how you grow, like even though he was an icon, he was someone who went through a complex kind of life, both in the ring and out of the ring. And lived in doing it in front of the whole world, which was amazing. And fought anyone, you know, Ernie Shavers talking about, you know, he didn't know how he survived the fight with him. You know, Ernie was knocking everybody out, you know.
Right.
You know, people weren't, you know, and so, you know, all the tough fights he took on towards the end of his career when, you know, with the idea he just wanted to give the people what they wanted, you know, and so, you know, that's something that is incredible about it. You know, one of the things we talk about on Real Sports Guys is, in particular when we're talking about athletes today, and I think LeBron has been a great example of this, you know, understanding kind of this, not because people are putting pressure on you, but understanding your own personal values around your larger kind of social responsibility. And, you know, kind of think about, you know, people like, at that time, Lew Alcindor, then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jim Brown, all these folks who were rallying around him when he was, you know, really contesting, you know, being drafted. And the fact that folks were putting careers on the line, you know, think about these folks are like 25, 26 years old and willing to kind of put their careers on the line. What similarities do you see to that? They're not necessarily putting their careers on the line as much, but some of the activism we see today with some of these student athletes, from Missouri football players to what the Clippers players did, and LeBron and all these folks giving, you know, the Sterling stuff. I mean, there's been this level of activism from athletes here recently, you know, with all, you know, the movement and some of the social stuff. Do you see essence of some of those things, that not to the great degree that you saw with Ali, and do you see that influence as part of it?
You know, that's a terrific question, because see, a lot of times what you saw in the past was you had people that became martyrs, all right, and they had a lot to lose. Okay, Ali had a loss, could have lost a lot, did lose a lot of money, lost his championship, you know, for a cause, for a religious cause, for a belief, okay? Changed his name for his religious beliefs, okay? Didn't care what anybody thought, okay? Said many times that he prayed to God every day. Said so even in the clip that you played prior to the show starting. You know, he's prayed to God every day. I don't know if in today's world, if these athletes are doing this, you know, to be self-absorbed, or if they're, you know, if they truly believe it. And let me tell you why. Because you, as we've talked about Donald Sterling, and you talked about the Clippers, but not one of those guys walked off the court and said they weren't going to play, but didn't miss a game. Okay, you do see some charity work sometime from some of these guys, but you have to ask yourself today, honestly, are they doing that in earnest, or are they doing that to change their image, you know, to give themselves a better image? You brought up LeBron James. LeBron James, you know, the self-proclaimed king of basketball, you know, was not, and it's still, the jury is out on his likability in the league. He does a lot of things, and I'm not going to sit here and say whether or not he's doing it because he's trying to give back. He probably does, and he gets a lot of good publicity for that. But yet and still, the skeptic in you cannot help but to say that, listen, this also has to help to boost its image, you know, because as many people like LeBron James, a lot of people still can't stand him, okay? So this is the thing about today. What are these athletes really willing to put out there? You know, what are they willing to risk, you know, for their cause? One thing about Muhammad Ali, he was willing to risk it all. Last thing about these other athletes, and granted, it's a different time. These were your trailblazers. These were the guys, the original foot soldiers that had to carve a path for today's athlete to come down. Okay, so your Muhammad Ali's, your Jim Browns, all of those guys, you know, the first to do anything as African-American athletes or athletes of color, yeah, their path was going to have to be, they were going to have to blaze the trail. So that your LeBron Jameses and for the Clipper players or anybody else to even try to speak out. But he had a lot to lose. So, you know, when you ask these guys, it's like, how much are you willing to lose? What are you willing to risk, you know, to take a stand? Are you willing to take the risk of a Muhammad Ali? Are you willing to take the risk of a Jim Brown? Just quit, you know, for a greater cause. And those players have to look at themselves in the face and ask themselves that, or are you just trying to promote your own self-image? So, you know, the skeptic in me, I can't say anybody today, you know, as well-liked as some of these athletes are, I can't see them doing what a Muhammad Ali did, what a Jim Brown did, because the risk to them, they were the trailblazers. I don't know what trail there is to blaze for some of these guys. And, you know, while we and granted, I'm not saying everything is good. It's not. But are you willing to put your career on the line? Are you willing to risk it all for a greater good, as some of these pioneers did? I don't see that happening today, and that again is one of the social problems that we have.
Well, and you know, I think what's interesting about it is, you know, one of the things that people, and this is why I think LeBron is doing it. When they had the meeting in a center that was focused on economic development, Jim Brown and others were really. And this is one of the issues I bring up today, and I think this is where athletes can have a tremendous impact. And I think where I think the modern-day athlete, like someone like LeBron is doing, is they understand their value as a corporation. In some ways, they are leveraging in the same way as those early business leaders did in the earliest 20th century when they leveraged their funds to impact and kind of, you know, do the things that allow for them to have a little bit more economic control. And so, you know, some of the stuff that he's doing with Akron, with the Akron Promise, some of the things that he's doing from a business standpoint to create opportunity is where I think he is maybe advancing the game. I said with LeBron, we're not going to understand his impact for another 15, 20 years with the thing this young man is laying down. And so, but I think you make some really good and important points that we got to pay attention to that I'd like to dig into, you know, a little bit deeper when we come back from this short break.
Everybody stop talking now. Attention. I told you, all of my critics, I told you all that I was the greatest of all times when I beat Sonny Liston. I told you today I'm still the greatest of all times. Never again defeat me. Never again say that I'm going to be defeated. Never again make me an underdog until I'm about 50 years old. Right then you might get me. But I...
University of Arkansas Razorbacks, and you're keeping it real with the Real Sports Guys. Whoopig.
All right, you listen to the One Mic on the Real Sports Guys platform. I'm here with my guy, Hank Davis, and we've been spending this first part of this podcast reflecting on Muhammad Ali, and we'll spend another segment kind of talking about this as well. You know, this is someone that has had an impact around the world in getting people, you know, who probably never saw him to fight, but to understand kind of what he meant to a larger sense in terms of our society, you know, the ultimate kind of intersection between sport and society is exemplified by the life of Muhammad Ali. He will be buried Friday. In a part of a large memorial service in Louisville, Kentucky. The eulogy will be conducted by, I think, Bill Clinton. It's going to be one of them, Billy Crystal, and Bryant Gumbel. And, you know, the dignitaries will probably be there from all over the world. I think there's a processional that's going to begin around 9 a.m. I'm going to some of his some of the main landmarks, and then ending up with the ceremony. And so, you know, we want to, as Real Sports Guys, these are things that are important to us, and you know, Hank and I have talked about here that, you know, obviously had an impact on both of our lives and folks around us and our growing up. And, you know, and we seem to be, you know, coming on, Hank and I are coming on, we seem to be talking about icons for most of our show. But, you know, I guess that it means the timing's right and we're probably the right people to have that discussion. You know, one of the things I probably, Hank, I want to get into in this kind of the final segment, and, you know, we got a little bit into the kind of the future and, you know, what does this mean and where the other voices come from. You know, one of the things I mentioned earlier when I was talking on the phone with Phil about this in terms of our generation was that this idea of, you know, Ali for me personally was the closest thing I thought I would come to would be a black president in terms of someone having a broader impact that I saw. I didn't have a chance to see Dr. King, didn't have a chance to see Malcolm X, but, you know, someone that had that kind of global impact on people and was that visibility in a way. Then we have Obama, which created a whole nother charge. This idea of thinking outside the box, living outside the box. You know, you and I know you work with a lot of young professionals. You work with a lot of young people. I do as well. You know, do you see a potential, given even everything that we said, you know, do you see the potential of having that kind of energy, you know, continue on? Do you see, you know, the growing activism that I've definitely seen on a college campus that I work on, you know, with folks, do you see that? Do you see possibilities that going coming out somewhere? You know, how do you see that happening? I'm pretty optimistic. So, you know, how do you see that kind of cultivation happening? Do you see that?
Well, I'll tell you. Again, I have to choose my words carefully, because what I think is going to happen is you're going to have a jolt somewhere, okay? There's just too much, in my opinion, crazy going on to allow, you know, order not to find its way. And you mentioned Missouri. You mentioned other campuses where the students themselves, you know, are saying enough. You know, what I am seeing is some students are trying to really, you know, reel it in a little bit, that is a little bit too out of control. When you go back again to what we saw and what, you know, when we talk about an Ali, when you talk about, there was a cause out there. There was a cause out there that was directly impacting young people, okay? They're taking lives away from young people. All right, we were in a war that we shouldn't have been in, the Vietnam War. And you were going to have a high-profile athlete get drafted and have to go to war. All right, now you think about, he won his title at 22 years old, so he's a very young man, Muhammad Ali. All right, so he doesn't do that. That impacts other young people. If you recall that during that time, you had college campuses across the country protesting against this war, all right? And the students could rally around that. They could rally around a young athlete at the peak of his career, willing to lay it aside, you know, for a cause. And they could rally around that. You're going to have something like that happen today. Right now, it's extremely sparse. All right, there are bits and pieces, and you can, to a certain degree, you know, look to the political arena and what's being said out here openly, you know, the hate that's being spewed openly by some of the candidates, and you can ask yourself, is that enough? Is that enough of a spark to rally the young people, you know, to rally a generation? And that's what you have to have. You have to have something that rallies a generation to get them behind something, to you know, want to be active in whatever that something is. Muhammad Ali did that. He took The fact that he wasn't going to go to war, the fact that he was African-American, the fact that he decided to, you know, follow the Muslim faith and still be able to be who he was, still, you know, self-proclaimed greatest of all time, but was a humanitarian, went around the world, okay, and into Africa, into England, into all these different places where he was able to be an ambassador amongst himself, okay? And so are we going to ever have – so I don't ever say never, because whatever was old, whatever was new has happened before. There's nothing new under the sun. So I'm never going to say never. But you're going to have some sort of rallying point right now versus the sparse activism in some campus, something to really galvanize everybody. I don't know what that is.
Well, I think you hit it right on the head. It's you know, what's that greater cause? A lot of times I'm talking to students about, you know, what's your why? You know, what's what gets you up every day? Because it's not what. It's not that you want to be a doctor. That's not enough. You know, the correlation between satisfaction and money, I think that drops off at about $50,000-$60,000. So salary's going up, satisfaction dropping off. So, you know, it comes down to what gets you up? You know, what are you trying to cause? What are the cause you're trying to serve? Is what becomes important. And I think, you know, I think back then, because of the fact that, you know, if you were an athlete at that time, you could really begin to see some of the stark differences. You were traveling into parts of the country where you may not have had the same luxury or treatment as some of your teammates. You could sense a lot of these different things. And so you were hypersensitive to it. I think that, you know, part of the Black Lives Matter movement may have created a lot more of that in a lot of different ways. But, you know, what's the sustainable? What's the end? And so out of those times came specific plans. So people came up with economic plans. People came up with other types of plans that were going to be a response to that. And what we don't see now is what, you know, what's the outcome? What's the solution? I think Hillary Clinton sat down with some young folks for the Black Lives Matter movement. Like, what do you want? Well, then, you know, you got to be able to have your 10-point program or your 3-point program and like really be clear about what your solution is. And so, you know, I think you're right. It's like, what I do admire about someone like LeBron is that I think he got his 10-point plan. He's not going to tell you. Because what he understands, what he watched from history is you can't let the people know the plan is coming. But every little piece that he has is about setting up that game plan from the billion-dollar deal with Nike to you know, the work he's doing in Akron to lay the foundation on the education piece to, you know, I think he's architecting up a plan in a way that is doing it while he's playing. Whereas a lot of these cats are doing it, and we'll talk a little bit about somebody else I think is doing it in ways that people wouldn't think they were doing it. But I think there's some folks who are beginning to understand that. They're just less – I think he's more stealth mode than anything. So I think you're going to see more athletes who are more stealth mode because they've seen the history and they've seen how people reacted, that they're laying the foundation in ways that they've learned from watching others. I think LeBron is probably the first one to put it all together. There's some other cats put together, but they're not put together at the level of LeBron.
Right, but here's the thing too. Okay, when you talk about LeBron, the one thing LeBron has that Muhammad Ali has is that he can be a polarizing character. Now, what he does with that, you know, but you know he has to figure out a way to use that to his advantage. All right. That's what Ali was able to do. When Ali was doing all that talking, people couldn't stand him, but he backed it up, okay? And even if he lost, he came right back and he conquered, okay? And he told people, you know, straight out, don't ever bet against me. I'm the greatest. Now, see, I don't know how that would play today. I really don't. But he was able to do it. You know, he did a lot of things that athletes today just ain't going to put themselves out to do. I mean, he was... That was the one thing you couldn't take from him. He didn't fear no man. You know, he would go while the fighter that he's fighting, his opponent, he would go to his training camp and start talking about him while he's in there sparring with somebody else, that we can fight on your front yard. You know, a lot of things I don't know he can get away, you can get away with today. And, you know, he did some greater good. I think that that's what a LeBron or a lot of these athletes need to do. If you're going to put yourself out there, put yourself out there all the way. And no, not to toot your own horn, but if you are going to be that activist, if you're going to be that one character that galvanizes a generation, then it takes a little bit of self-sacrifice. It takes a little bit of, okay, I know that I'm going to have to put myself out here a little bit further than I want to, and I'm going to upset some sponsors, and I'm going to upset some people because this is what I believe in. And how strong is your faith in what you believe in? And that's where, you know, regardless of how you spend your money, you know, that was the difference between Muhammad Ali and the modern athlete. I don't care. This is what I believe in, and this is what I'm going to do. You're not going, I'm not going to be bought on that.
Well, Ben, I'm telling you, you know, we're fortunate and to have lived in this time. You know, it's one of those things where, you just can't you can't imagine having it back. It's just you know, like I said, I'm feeling like you know, that we're fortunate. So, you know, we will close out this segment. You know, I as I told Phil T, I said, you know, it hurt my heart when I heard he passed, because it just felt like so much of the things that happened in my life were just coming to forefront, and really made me even think more about what my purpose is being here, you know, what it is that I'm hoping to leave. And so, again, we thank y'all for being with us, One Mic, here on the Real Sports Guys platform. It's Devon and it's Hank. We got more. We're going to shift gears when we come back from this message. We're gonna hit a little bit of Inside the Park. We're gonna bring that episode back. Hank is gonna drop some knowledge. We're gonna have a little musical interlude, and then we're gonna come back in. We'll hit that Inside the Park. Hank gonna drop that knowledge on you on the baseball side. There's a lot happening in the game, and you know, I know he's ready to go, and so. Inside the Park will come back after we take this little short break.
honky tonk.
Pulling against them. I don't like the Red Sox anyway. Sorry, Boston Nation, but still.
You know, you have to be impressed with what you're seeing with some of the players on that team. The question is, how consistent can they be? Because while I'm sitting here right today telling you about, you know, how impressive those feats were with Jackie Bradley, with Mookie Betts, and even with Big Poppy, you know, they almost got shut out today, you know, by the Toronto Blue Jays, who you know, not they're just playing so-so ball themselves, third in the East. But you look at the you look at that game today, and seven innings that was pitched before it was broke up. At the time, the Blue Jays was winning that game 5-0 before Boston made a feverish comeback, only to lose 5-4. So that's going to probably go all season long. And then the great enigma in the East, of course, is the New York Yankees. You know, the great spend-all Yankees. They won't spend all that money to bring in Aroldis Chapman. You know, you got an aging A-Rod. And for a minute there, they were floundering in the East. They've kind of rebounded a little bit. They're still under 500 and then rounding out with Tampa Bay. Over in the bipolar division, which is the American League Central, you now have the Cleveland Indians leading by half a game over the Kansas City Royals, followed by the White Sox, who started off like gangbusters, only to figure that, okay, they had no business out there in first place and decided to come back to the pack. Then again, the up-and-down Detroit Tigers and rounding it out with the Twins. When you look over in the West, you know, you have Texas now leading, followed by Seattle, Houston, Los Angeles, and Oakland. You know, I look at that. You look at that West, and at one time, that you had three teams in there that you thought could all contend for the American League pennant as well as the World Series. And now, when I look at them, I'm not so sure any of these teams are going. Houston, I guess last year they realized, you know, that was fun for a minute, but now the party is over, and they're coming back to earth. And I don't know if the Los Angeles Angels has the youth to really compete. You know, Mr. All Everything, Mike Trout, is over there. But Albert Pujols, he had a home run today. But Albert Pujols seems to just be an average player going on in Oakland. Just gave away all their pieces. So, you know, the American League, in my opinion, is wide open. There is no, from the first few games out here, we're watching the first 50-plus games is being played. You really don't see a real front runner. You see a lot of teams that get hot and get cold, get hot and get cold. We have to really pay very close attention to that in the American League and see how that transpires. With that being said, you know, it's really difficult for me to really pinpoint who you want to see as far as all-stars. You just have these players going up and down. I say let's watch. Probably next time we come on the air, we'll be able to, you know, really pinpoint who we're looking at as far as the all-stars in the American League. We look over to the National League, and we have some of our same cast of characters as Washington and the New York Mets in the East. The Washington Nationals holding a two-game lead over the Mets. And I kind of pretty much expect this to be a two-horse race all season long. You know, when you got Max Scherzer able to strike out 21 Detroit Tigers when they had an opportunity there, the problem right now with the Mets is that the Dark Knight, Matt Harvey, is struggling. And I think he's out for 6 to 8 weeks right now. That's going to be a problem. I said when we had the Inside the Park segment, we had the show way back when Matt Harvey was a rookie. I said then, I'm taking credit for this, that he was going to have a problem because the Mets were really pitching him a lot as a rookie. And now they're struggling with trying to keep him healthy and on the field. So, you know, we're going to have to keep watch that development as the year progresses. I'm impressed with the Miami Marlins. They're playing good ball, you know, again, just a little bit above 500. But they've got some nice young talent over there. I am impressed with I like Christian Yelich. You know, I like Fernandez coming back with that team. We've got to pay very close attention to them and see if they can make a push in the second half of the season, get through the first half, and then we'll see how they're doing. Rounding out that division, obviously, with Philly and Atlanta. The story of the major leagues this year is the red-hot Chicago Cubs. Okay, say what you will, but the red-hot Chicago Cubs are really the story of this first half of the season. Of everybody else in the American in the major leagues, the Chicago Cubs have a 9.5-game lead over the Pittsburgh Pirates. They have been lights out, and they're a fun team to watch. They're a fun team to watch. Lurking in third place in that division in the National League Central, though, is the St. Louis Cardinals. You never count them out, ever count them out. Okay, and rounding that out also is Milwaukee and Cincinnati. Going into the American National League West, Again, it's an even year. Watch out for, of course, the San Francisco Giants. 4-game lead over the Dodgers. You got Colorado, and then the ugliest uniforms in the majors this year with the Arizona Diamondbacks and the San Diego Padres. You know, when I look at the league this year, again, it's going to come down, if I had to go early, it's going to come down to San Francisco and Chicago. That's going to be fun. Two teams that's got a wealth of pitching. You know, I have to look at the Cubs' offense over the Giants, and everybody wants to say, I know I've got some Washington fans out there saying, don't count us out, don't count us out. Well, listen, until you get it done, okay, down the stretch, I'm counting you out. It's Max Scherzer. You play always great the first few months of the season. Then you get down to crunch time and you disappear, just like last year, just like the year before. You know, it should have already been time for you, Nationals. I'm not convinced this year, and quite honestly, your offense don't impress me. All right, so I want to move on a little bit and talk a little bit about a series to watch, you know, just games to watch this week. You know, there's a couple of games when we were doing Inside the Park, and we're going to bring it back for this year. What I'm going to call the Grand Slam Series of the Week. This is going to be the 3-game set you need to keep your eye on because it's some intriguing baseball. This week I'm picking the Red Sox against the Giants. Okay, two teams that I've kind of highlighted a little bit in this segment because of the marquee matchup of Madison Bumgarner versus David Price. Now, regardless of the record, you're talking about two incredible pitchers, okay, and two teams that's at the top of their divisions. And it's going to be very intriguing baseball to watch. You want to really get to see some players that's really been sticking out this season and some all-stars on both of those teams. Pay a very good attention to the Grand Slam Series of the Week, which will be the Red Sox against the Giants. Now, on the flip side of that, we also have what I call the Swing and a Miss Series of the Week. Yes, this is the series where if you can get a ticket, you ain't got nothing to do on that night, and you want to sit up and watch professional baseball, I guess you go to this game. All right, two teams that's sitting in the bottom of their divisions when you got the Oakland A's against the Milwaukee Brewers. You know, you think about this, if you were to wax nostalgic on this particular series, you can look at the A's and you can say players like, early players like a Yoenis Cespedes, you could say like a Josh Donaldson, you could say they're with other teams. You could say on the Brewers side, you could say people like a Prince Fielder, you know, all these players are gone. They're with other teams, they're helping other teams out, and so you got a couple of also-ran players, and then you got, you know, guys from the minor leagues that's trying to make a spot. So there'd be your Swing and the Miss Series of the Week. For some of you geeks, you might want to go and check out the farm system and see what's going on there. As we move on with this segment, I'll be a little bit more detailed on what we're looking at for players, looking at what they're going to be doing, looking at the progress of the farm teams and who's going to be making moves, who should sell, who should buy. Listen, it's going to be a long baseball season. We're just getting started. So that's it for Inside the Park at this particular time. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back, and we're going to keep the show rolling.
Be right.
The RSV family. You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park.
Greatest, and we've been spent some time talking about him. We had a great segment of Inside the Park that you definitely got to check out. It will be on its own podcast on iTunes. If you really love it, please leave a review and give us 5 stars. Hank is working hard getting this thing back on the rotation, and we're loving it. Really interesting talk around baseball, and we want to really try to bring that back into what we do on the IRC platform as well. We got another thing going on here tonight while we're on the air that could be a swing and a miss. you could be a whole bunch of other things going on out there in Oakland, California. I mean, it is a good old-fashioned beatdown, as I'm thinking. I'm looking right here, 91-64. I'm on this little we have this little text messaging group between myself, Game Changer, and Phil. And, I mean, the messages are blowing up. They're going back and forth. Hank, you saw game one. Right now, it just looks like they got him game two. It looks like Barnes, Elbow, Love. What do you make of this? I picked the Warriors to win, and Game Changers called me flip flopping. But I explained to Phil today, you know, it was, and I blame it on Phil. I went to a few weeks ago. I was in Cleveland doing some work, and Phil set it up. So we went and checked out the Cavs against Toronto. And one of the things I told about Phil that. And it's something we're going to try and unpack, but you would understand this growing up in Michigan and, you know, what sports means in sports means something different in upper Midwest cities like Detroit, Cleveland, even towards the east, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Indianapolis to some extent, that, you know, economically, these are areas that have been going through it. And, you know, football's crazy in the South, but you got sun. You got people moving to the South. You got a whole bunch. But these are cities that are fighting for identity. And a lot of times it is sport that reminds them that they should have confidence and a stronger self-esteem. And so when I was in Cleveland, and obviously the 30 for 30 about Cleveland was out and all these different things, you can sense, you know, even though that's a city I used to recruit in Cleveland, it's a city that's been transformed, particularly over the past 20 years, got much more of a moving from manufacturing to a much more kind of commerce kind of economy that is kind of more around. You got the Hall of Fame for rock and roll and that, but it's still a city that is looking for that team to kind of reestablish itself. And so I kind of moved to the Cleveland side a little bit. I was like, saw LeBron. I mean, he had a triple double that night. They put the camera on him. He kept looking up. The crowd was going crazy. And they finally gave him the salute. They just went wild. And there's something about that connectivity. But then these boys over in Oakland, they just don't care. I've been going back and forth with Game Changer about Draymond Green, you know, talking about whether or not he's a max player or not. And I just keep telling them, y'all can all keep telling me not a max player. Problem is Draymond don't believe y'all. And so it don't matter what you say. he dang near averaging triple doubles. He don't really care what you say about it. All he does is win. And Kerr, and they kind of got a machine, and now they're up like 102-75. So, as a long entry, what do you make of this, man?
Okay, first of all, wasn't it game-changing that said Oklahoma City was going to the finals?
He said it, and then he tried to back off. And so I finally had to send a text to him like, hold up, we're going back and forth. He getting on me about my series. I said, hold up, you the one that said Oklahoma City was going to the finals. Now you out here freelancing, free agent. You like a you in center field just playing to win because you don't really have a dog in the race. So you're correct. He did say Oklahoma City.
Because, see, I was prepared.
Not only going to the finals, he said they're going to win.
Okay, the reason why I was asking you that because I was prepared. I was preparing myself to do a, on these airwaves, to do an open apology when they were up 3-1. Why? Because I told everybody out there who's listening that he was out of his mind. I said he needed therapy, okay? And the reasons why I said that was because I said that Russell Westbrook, and that team has not shown that they're able to put a team away because they lose their minds at the end of ball games. Okay, and until they show something different, anybody picking them needed therapy. That was my words. And I was willing to come on these airways and eat crow, only to find that the crow flew away, and I was absolutely correct. So, with that being said, now we can move to what we're talking about right now. All right? What you have with the Golden State Warriors and what you have with the Cleveland Cavaliers, anybody who's been watching the NBA over the years should not be surprised by what they see if they have been watching these playoffs at all. And this is what I'm saying. If you don't believe for a second that the Golden State Warriors went into this playoff season fatigued, then you haven't been watching the whole year, okay? To win 73 ball games, to go into San Antonio, and to beat that team to get the 73rd ball game, they went for it. They rolled the dice that they were going to be talented enough to get through the first few rounds and be ready for the finals. Then they kind of got a little roadblock. What happened? Their best player, dare I say, the MVP, undisputed, voted MVP, first time ever in the league, okay, went down with a knee injury, all right? They were pushed by a very talented Portland team, very talented Portland team. You could see some talent on that Portland team that you haven't seen before, okay? Shocking. Now, I say to you that that kind of threw them a little bit, okay? So then they're just trying to get their legs underneath them, all right? Oklahoma City made San Antonio look old. We all saw that, all right? And so they came in, and you had a tired, fatigued championship team that was pushed to the brink and by all accounts should have lost, okay? But as Oklahoma City does, they let you off the mat. That's been their MO all season, and now we're in the finals. Now let's go over to the East, all right? Clearly the most talented team all year long were the Cleveland Cavaliers. They didn't have any competition, okay? The only reason why, if you've been watching, that Toronto won because it was up in Canada, and they got disinterested. They had won, what, 10 games in a row before they lost that? They became totally disinterested. Anytime you got players like Bismack Biyombo start becoming household names and you don't laugh, that tells you that the team is disinterested. Once they got interested, that series was over. This shouldn't surprise anybody. You got a team that's already won a championship, all right, that was not going that was kicking Cleveland's butt all season. All right. Now all of a sudden we're in the playoffs. This team has gotten resurgence. They can see the prize. They've won it before. And Cleveland now, the Kyrie Irvings, the Kevin Loves, they weren't here last year. Okay? And guess what? They're deer in the headlights. This game is over already, and I'm going to tell you, Cleveland better win both of them. I don't think they will. They better win both of them at home. They better win that first one back in Cleveland, or this is a sweep, in my opinion.
Yeah, man. I mean, I more you look at that Golden State battle against OK City and then the previous battle against Portland, like, really prepared him for this series. And when I watched game one, I think the Cavaliers are so hyped and so excited. I mean, it's almost like boxing. They punched themselves out. Kyrie came out shooting everything, like with no, you don't see any ball movement, anything. They forcing the issue and they're reverting. You know, they played for like 2.5-3 months. They really found a style. And then it seems like they're just going back to what they were doing earlier in the season rather than just straight ball movement. And, you know, when I watched them at the queue, what you saw right away is they got the first 10, 15 seconds, there was a lot of ball movement. And then the ball found the open person. And I don't see them doing a lot of that. I see them getting back into the ISO pounding, and that's not going to work against it. In some ways, they might have to go back and play big with Mozgov. I can get a chance to see a lot of the game tonight, but they might have to do what OKC did, just go with a bigger lineup and just use size on them. Their bigs aren't as athletic as the bigs that OKC has.
No, but here's everything. Here's what works in Cleveland, that works at disadvantage for Cleveland, all right? Again, they didn't have the only team, in my opinion, that pushed them at all, and that team didn't win a game. That was the Detroit Pistons. All those games with the Pistons were close games. The Pistons was in their grill. They just did not have the talent to get over the top, okay? Atlanta, what was that? That was wet toilet paper. And again, the Toronto series was nothing. Okay, if you watch that series, you could tell Cleveland sleptwalked through the two games they lost. This team is more immensely talented than anybody they've played. Okay, you have a coach over there that's got experience at winning a championship. Which now Tyronn Lue, we're going to see for real what Tyronn Lue is made of. Okay, these are all intangibles when it comes to playing and winning a championship. You just can't get some dude out the stands and come and coach a team and say, win me a title. Okay? Some of the adjustments that Steve Kerr made, you know, in the OKC series, that he's going to make in this series, that he's going to counter with. Okay? Then you got two players, like I said, Kyrie, who's been shooting lights out with nobody on him. You knew this series. You should have known this series was going to be troublesome for Cleveland when Livingston was your lead scorer in game one. Okay, that your big stars really didn't get off that much, and you got the doors blown off. As each game goes on, you know, the MVP is going to get stronger. They're going to get back into their continuity. Everybody's got their focus. They've got their legs back. This is the finals. Okay, all sleepwalking is over. All right, Cleveland's got to figure out a way to find another level. They haven't been pushed this whole playoff season. They haven't been pushed. Now they're being pushed, and it's a problem. Now, you know, can they come back? Of course. But it don't look good. It don't look good because of the opponent in front of them, okay? And if you think that Golden State is going to let the foot off the gas at this point, they're not going to do it. So if Cleveland can't muster a victory in game three, this one might be over in four.
Yeah, and Draymond had 28, 9, and 5. You know, I just sent that to Game Changer, you know, to try to let him know all that talk about Max and no Max is being shut down. So, you know, when we get back on the air, you and I will have a chance to really see what went down. It's not a series until the home team loses one, but, you know, like you said, they're gonna make a home stand and they got to figure out how to come back in. I think he's got to play folks like Delly Moore. I think he's gonna have to go, like they did last year, go defensive-minded and find a way to get his offensive guys on the floor. They played better last year against Golden State because what they basically did was took the air out of the ball. They got their best defensive players in the game and then really made it tough and let LeBron do a lot of stuff. And then he's got to figure out how to get him in. Kyrie just doesn't play good enough defense, and Love – played great defense. He played pretty good defense in the first game. I don't know how I didn't get a chance. I'll look back at what they did tonight, but he's gonna have to load more on the defensive side of it. Let LeBron do his thing, you know, like you would a running back. Let him get the first and 10 and get you down and find ways to get the offensive guys in as they learn how to play defense. If they're not gonna play defense, stick with the guys like Delly and guys who gonna help you get stops so that LeBron can control the game. They have to go back to the model they had last year. Before we close on this, if they lose this in grand fashion, like a sweep, what does that say for the coaching change? And the fact that you let a guy go because you thought he couldn't get you over the top, you know, I think he's trying to take a job. Black is looking at going back to Europe. But, you know, what does that say when you know, if you just get swept? I mean, he had you competitive, you know, without Kyrie and everybody else, you know. And now, you know, the first two games, you're basically getting blown off the hinges. Like, what do you say about Blatt? I mean, Blatt's stock has got to go up.
Well, here's the problem with that. See, now, David Blatt, I mean, Blatt, he made some bonehead moves himself. But that being said, he didn't have a full complement of players. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, if just
or
because
support.
You want a player coach, here's where it comes into. Here's where it comes into play. Okay, Tyronn Lue, again, anybody who thinks that the East, you know, was competitive at all is laughable. Okay, it was not. Okay, the fact that, you know, that Toronto and Atlanta was the teams you had to go through wasn't saying much. It really wasn't. But that being said, you got a coach. You have coaches, okay, mm-hmm. in the West, not just Kerr, but you also had Billy Donovan, who I'm going to tell you right now should really get some Coach of the Year awards, because he did have that team playing some defense and had them on the brink. And again, you got a hard-headed player that, you know, you kind of brought around, and when you got him to play your style of basketball, would have had you in the finals, but he's hard-headed, okay? And you got players like – you got coaches like Popovich. Those guys know how to strategize in the playoffs. This is going to be a significant hole for Cleveland to overcome. Tyronn Lue is – when you say what you want, you know, but you ain't played nobody. Now you're going against the champs. You know, how – you know, confident is he going to be in the moves that he makes the very first time? You got a rookie coach here. You know, LeBron James, you need to play. You can't coach the team. And you got a coach fired that got you. Y'all lost in six. So if you get your doors blown off in four, yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be said. And I'm going to tell you right now, fair or unfair, it's going to have a lot to be said about him.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be, and I'm talking about LeBron, it's like, you got to be surrounded by Hall of Famers just to win a championship. When you've got two, you know, credible players in Love and Irving, okay? So you need to be the man. And if you can't be the man, yeah, and you go, what, 2-4 in finals, and the only time you won is with Dwayne Wade, that's going to say a lot about your status as the greatest player of all time. Stats mean nothing. It's championships when you're in the NBA like that.
Well, we're going to take a break when we come back. It seems like we got to talk about him every time we're on the podcast. It's our guy from Ann Arbor, Michigan. They keep testing him. They keep testing him. They better know he's the new Drake. He's football's version of Drake. We'll talk about it when we come back. guys. One Mic here at Devon Wilson and Hank Davis. This has been a great show. Well, Who's Got Beef is our next segment. So when I interviewed Coach Bielema, one of the things I asked about was like, what's all this, you know, stuff about these satellite camps? And if you have a chance, go to iTunes, check out, it's a great interview. I mean, Bielema, as usual, is always great. And he gave us a history on just kind of where it all started. It started out, he said, really teams came down from Oklahoma into Texas. It was a great way for them to try to get a foothold in. He said that there were a couple of coaches that went up from the SEC and kind of brought that to the Big Ten to come down. And then in recent years, you know, Harbaugh, you know, kind of took it to another level. And then he mentioned that the day before when I interviewed him, that the NCAA sent him like a 6-page letter because they had to go back and say, yes, you can do it, and, you know, all this other stuff. And so Saban, who Nick Saban, Alabama coach, who has done his share of winning. People have to understand his origin is the Big Ten. I always remind SEC people that, you know, their run was built on leadership of, you know, at least three coaches with origins from the Big Ten. So I always let folks know that, to remind them of that, you know, that Urban and Saban and have their origins in Midwest Big Ten coaches. Les Miles. So,
yeah.
You know, I always try to remind folks of that. Okay, so you know, Jim Harbaugh has been hitting the ground and doing his thing, sleeping, you know, willing to sleep in recruits' room. You know, Jim is just doing it all out there. Hank and I had a chance to go see the spring game. And so, you know, you got Nick Saban at, you know, the presser, you know, SEC presser, and he's going off about these satellite camps that he said he wasn't going to talk about. And talking about his integrity, who's looking out for the game, not the SEC, not the Big Ten, not all this. Who's looking out for the game and the integrity of that? Who's watching for that? And Harbaugh, who I call the new football version of Drake, comes back with back-to-back again and basically blasts him and Alabama for being critical when – they got their own set of violations they had to deal with recently in their history around cheating and everything else, and now they're the moral authority around who should be doing this, you know, at all. And then, you know, Harbaugh hits him again. So, you know, you're there in Ann Arbor, man. Tell me, when you saw this, what'd you say?
I loved it. I loved it. You asked the wrong one if you're looking for some controversy. I love it. You know, this is what you do, all right? He basically saying you're going to sit here and be a hypocrite. That's, he called him a hypocrite. You know, you done broke rules. You done did all these different things, and then you're going to come out and say what's in the best interest of the kids. You worrying about violations? Give me a break. You know, he said, you know, it's laughable. You know, and you got all these apologists for the SEC, you know, saying, well, you know, this Paul Feinbaum character, for example. He comes out and says, well, he's going to attack Nick Saban, when actually Nick Saban was trying to talk about what to look out for. And that's not the case. Everybody knows what Nick Saban's issue is, what the SEC's issue is. You know, if you got a coach that's that aggressive, and Jim Harbaugh is very aggressive, and, you know, you're going to pull some players. I do believe this, that given the time, this is a character that really does scare these coaches, because Michigan could have a juggernaut based upon how he does stuff, because you cannot question his ability to coach. You know, it was brought to my attention that Nick Saban was in the pros at one time and failed. Jim Harbaugh didn't fail in the pro game. He got a team to the Super Bowl that was 5-9 when he took over, or something like that. Okay, 5-11 when he took over. All right, and now he got into the Super Bowl in 2 seasons. So you talk about a coach that's got a pedigree of knowing how to win, and now he's got a way to get the players. Don't think for a second that these coaches aren't concerned with that. And yeah, I love it. And I'm gonna tell you right now, my Michigan brethren love it too. All right, the brand's getting out there all over the world in a positive light, and you know it's a ruffling some feathers because it's been status quo. All right, it's been status quo. If you ask me, I think even Urban's been quiet because he came from the SEC and he's doing some stuff, so he can't kick too hard. Because he don't want nobody opening up his closet neither, because the skeletons will fall out of there like an old cemetery. You know it.
Man, I'm telling you, it's been crazy watching it, man. And yeah, I think folks, even when I asked Bielema, folks, like, I just think folks are like, I don't know if I'm going to go after this guy. I'm just going to let him do what he does, and I'm not going to. Get on him too deep. I'm just going to get out the way. I think people will learn to kind of stay out of Harbaugh's way because he's not taking any prisoners. He's coming and taking everybody out. And it's been great to watch because he just doesn't care. And I'm just fascinated.
You should be, because see, they think they've tried to make him out to be a maniacal lunatic. They've tried to make him out to be like this crazed individual. The problem with Jim Harbaugh is Jim Harbaugh is smarter than everybody else. Jim Harbaugh lives, eats, and drinks all aspects of the game. He's very well read. If you hear some of his quotes and who he quotes, he is very well versed. And he has thought very clearly about what he's doing and why he's doing it. And, you know, he is trying to be an ambassador, of course, first and foremost for the University of Michigan, but for football itself. You know, there is a local radio station here that says Jim Harbaugh may have some concerns about the health of football. You know, youth football enrollment is down here in Ann Arbor. You know, you know, in Ann Arbor you had three teams. Well, now they've only got the one team because enrollment has gone down. He had a free camp here for the kids to teach football the right way, you know, so that the welfare of football is in good hands. And those are things that, yeah, you know, because all these camps that he's running, all them kids ain't coming to Michigan, all right? Yeah. But he's going to get the ones he wants. But he is concerned about the welfare of football, and he will tell you that. And you're seeing that. What scares everybody is that the brand that's being promoted is the University of Michigan. And that, you give this coach the players he needs, and he's gonna run a train on the SEC, and they see it coming.
All right. So we're going to do the Hardball Watch. You know, it seems like something new every time we come on the air. Hopefully I can get a interview set up with him, and we can talk to him firsthand. But, when we come back, we're going to hit a couple of other things that hit with beef and a couple other topics before we close out the podcast. This is One Mic on the Real Sports Guys platform. We're here with my guy Hank Davis. This is Devon Wilson. We'll catch you after these messages.
His mama named Clay. I'm going to call him Clay.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
know you should.
All right, welcome back to One Mic. This is D. Wills on with my guy Hank here as we close out the show. One of the things that we wanted to do is we want to try to foreshadow, we want to project into the future what we think a headline might be in the next 30 days. What is something that we think will come true here? And so this segment is, what is the future headline that you see in the next 30 days? And so I'll start with that. My future headline is Sean Porter defeats Keith Thurman. They fight on June 25th for the welterweight championship of the world in the Barclays Center. Two great young fighters. You know, Keith Thurman is on a tear, but they both know each other from childhood. But I predict that Sean Porter will have the upset of Keith Thurman. It's a long shot, but that's my mind. Hank, what about yours?
Mine is a good one, that the SEC and the Big Ten announced that they will do an SEC-Big Ten football challenge beginning in 2018, that they will line those teams up and they will play a non-conference game every year.
Wow. All right, Hank, we're going to let you call up the mic here in the next 30 seconds.
Okay, listen. I would be remiss if I did not close out the mic to once again, you know, bring us back to the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali. You know, as I said earlier in the show, the first time I remember Ali was during the Frazier fight. Back in the day of Wide World of Sports, you would have Muhammad Ali, you know, spinning all of his yarn, all of his poetry on what he was going to do and how he's going to do it. You would have fights with Muhammad Ali just so that you could watch him fight against the likes of people like a Jerry Quarry, a Jean-Pierre Koopman, or a Chuck Wepner, just to see him kick somebody's butt, you know. And then you always had the big fights. We're going to miss the champ, but again, the greatest of all time, and, you know, God bless you, rest in heaven.